Moncrief on News Talk.
There are loads of car dealerships in Ireland, but only one of them is owned by a woman. And that woman has an extraordinary story. Prior to owning Ashford Motors, Nadia Adan was a stockbroker. She's an influencer with nearly 300,000 followers. And it's all not bad for a little girl who came here as a refugee from Somalia. Nadia, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon, Sean. Thank you for that incredible introduction. I'll have to live up to it now.
You do, yeah. So no pressure. We were just talking about this before we came on air. So Mogadishu was home where you lived with your mother. How old were you when you left?
We left after the war. It was kind of in the early 90s. And I suppose by the time we got to Ireland, it was a couple of years later because it took a couple of years to get here through going through different countries, being in different camps, eventually getting a boat over to Ireland. And we ended up in O'Connell Street, me and my mum, in the mid to late 90s. And back then, Ireland was a very different to Ireland to what it is now. Immigration wasn't like back then what it is now. And when we landed in O'Connell Street, we were welcomed with open arms from the Irish people. And initially we were brought into state care to basically cover the costs so my mum could get up and running to start working. And when we were able to do that, she worked multiple jobs. Actually, at one stage, she was working 6 jobs to put me through school. And we were then able to enter private rental accommodation. And she put me through my education. But not only that, she put me through Trinity, which I'm not very academic. So that was a tough job for her. So she worked super hard. And I went into the working world, worked as a stockbroker. And 4 years ago, I decided to quit my job and open up a garage, Ashford Motors in Wicklow, which is doing so well now. And I'm very lucky. But Ireland is home to me. It's all I ever know. Like if I went back to Africa now to visit, I wouldn't fit in there culturally. I wouldn't, because I'm Irish. So where do I fit in? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you were like 7 or 8, something like that.
7 or 8 when we landed.
Landed.
But we left a few years previous to that.
But you're in the 90s, like it was in an awful state. There was multiple wars going on. A lot of the peacekeeping troops had withdrawn. So your mother had originally had a business though in Mogadishu. Yeah. She was doing well.
She was doing amazing. She had her own airline, believe it or not.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, she was working with the United Nations to bring in medical supplies and food and cargo into Mogadishu with the UN at the time. And she would have gone to Moscow, if you can believe it, back in the 80s and lease Antonov Cessna's big cargo fleet planes. That was her business. But then when the war happened, the airspace got shut down and that was it. We had nothing. Everything's gone. And you're just at fight or flight mode then at that point. You have to get out of there. And we did. And, you know, we kind of got in touch with traffickers. That's what happens. And you pay and you get out of there. It wasn't easy. It was a long story.
Describe the route, actually.
Yeah, so it's East Africa. It started off in Somalia and then we went through Kenya, Sudan. We were in the Sahara Desert, you know, and then through the boats, through up there. And then we ended up in Europe and then we ended up in Ireland. And it was a couple of years. We were homeless.
So in that couple of years, I assume there was places where you stayed for a while, whether voluntarily
camps
or not.
Yeah, different camps. We were caught and then you'd be deported. You'd be kind of put back to the last country. You'd go again. And again, I was very young, Sean, when all of this was going on. So my mum would have better knowledge of exactly what was going on.
Yeah, of course.
I remember one night in particular, we were in the middle of a field or somewhere like that. We were all in a hut. There was like 20 of us and I was on a bed with my mum and we left in the middle of the night and there was 30 of us and we were walking for hours. It just felt like it was forever. And I just always remember my mum would be holding my hand and we would always get somewhere. I always felt okay because she was protecting me. And it was the same thing when we got to Ireland and she has a really, we always had nice clothes from what we had. And I didn't come from, you know, a poverty background. I came from a really good background. And I remember she had a really expensive like fur coat on when we landed. We looked really well.
Not your typical view.
That had nothing. And this was a totally different experience for my mom having to start again.
Yeah.
And kind of beg and, you know, get going again. And she worked as a cleaner. She cleaned toilets. She worked in the pub. She washed dishes. Anything she could do. And she just literally drilled into my head education, because that's where she wanted me to come, was Ireland. And Ireland was really renowned all over the world for to have the best education.
Was that why?
It was an English speaking country. And I think maybe as well, England was probably over, you know, it was probably harder to get in there. A lot of people trying to get in there. And again, as I said, when I came to Ireland, the immigration wasn't what it is now. Yeah, there was a lot more space. People were welcoming. If they saw a mum and a child on the street, they were giving us £100 notes at the time on the street.
Crikey.
And it was the times of pound notes.
Yeah.
Whereas now you can see there's a lot more immigration happening, and I can see frustrations on both sides. And even though I'm trying not to be hypocritical, because I was a refugee and I came in and Ireland gave me so much opportunity to have a better life, it's just the infrastructure and the healthcare and the homelessness and everything. There's so much of that going on, and the immigration levels have really increased as well.
Yeah. So when you arrived, did you go into, was there a direct provision then?
Basically it was the equivalent of direct provision now, but on a much smaller scale. So because there wasn't much happening, the vetting was quicker. You got into the system quicker, which meant you weren't in limbo for years and you could integrate with your community. And that's what we did. And I was so young going to school here, I was able to integrate, get on with people. And that's what it's about, you know, getting on with people and integrating.
Yeah. Was that in Dublin?
That was in Talla. Yeah, it was. It was in Talla. And as you can imagine, at the time in the 90s, there wasn't a huge lot of foreigners in Talla. You know, I was the only one. Did I experience a bit of racism? Very minimal, but it was kind of kid stuff that you would experience if you were fat with glasses, which I was at the time as well. So that really didn't help me. Do you know what I mean?
So, you have a dub accent. So
I do, yeah.
So, but your mother wouldn't have had, I assume, and doesn't. So did she experience it at all?
She definitely experienced it more than I did, per se, because I, again, as you said, I was able to integrate whatever. But she has her own business now. And I just think, in general, Irish people are so welcoming. They are. They know what it's like. Like, Sean, you remember on that wall, you know, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs.
Yeah.
They're on that list as well. They know what it's like to go around the country. I just think what Irish people is, you need to meet them halfway. And you need to, if you're coming to the country like I did, asking for help, you integrate. And I'm working here now, have my own business, you know. I'm contributing to the economy, and I am Irish, and I breathe it. And you sort of have to meet them halfway at that point. And I just think they are the most welcoming people in the world.
Yeah. Do you feel that you have to keep pointing that out, that you feel Irish? But you've lived here most of your life, to all extents and purposes, you are Irish. So why do you have to point that out to people?
I suppose the only reason I'm pointing out now is because of a comment I received, because I'm doing a charity calendar at the moment, which I did one last year. It's sold out all over the world, and I raised $5,000 for Men's Aid. My chosen charity is Men's Aid again this year. They're a really undervalued charity. They took 32,000 calls in the last 4 years for men that are in domestic abuse. Their oldest victim is 90, their youngest 18. So it really affects everyone. And because my target audience and the people I sell cars to most are men, that's the charity I wanted to go with again. So the calendar is out there, it is there. It's Nadia at the movies. It's 12 classic cars from movies. We've got Kit from Knight Rider, Eleanor from Gone in 60 Seconds, the most amazing cars. So I put up a post about it, and somebody commented that a white Irish person would be a better model than me, and that's why I felt like it was important, not to make me feel better, because it's water off a duck's back. I understand if I put myself out there, you take the rough with the smooth. But for other people who are like me, who are looking at what's happening in the country at the moment, the frustration, certain people saying there is absolutely no room for hatred and racism. But you can also understand, you know, some people in circumstances in terms of the infrastructure and the vetting, and the decision makers need to be looked at for that. Absolutely they do. And maybe an overhaul needs to be done. But I basically have come out and I told my story to show other foreign people that came here as a kid, you know, that don't feel bad about yourself, where you came from, you know, in this moment in time with everything going on.
Yeah. And given that, you know, we did, someone says that's not a Talla accent.
It depends who I'm talking to.
Yeah,
I can do if
it's
I'm haggling.
Probably what street in Talla you're talking about? Talla's a big place.
Well, Talla's very posh now. You know,
well,
it's
that's
changed.
True, yes.
It's changed.
Yeah.
But it depends who I'm talking to. If I'm haggling with a guy from Cork, then it's all buy this and buy that.
Okay, so you're adaptable. That's a good thing to have. Though, like that particular comment, though, that was just naked racism. That was nothing to do with whether we've enough room in the country for to take in more refugees or homelessness or any of those things. That's just ugly stuff.
Absolutely. Really. And it's so easy for these trolls behind fake accounts to throw out throw out these comments. And that's why I think it's important to call it out, because there is no room for that. And, you know, and then the support I've received off the back of that, and everyone's claimed me as one of their own. So I'm delighted.
Yeah. Do you get where are you from? And you say Tala, and they go, "No, where are you really from?"
Yeah, do you know what? Not as often as I used to. I think it's because I'm well known now. So, you know, a lot of people that come out to me know me already. But definitely a couple of years ago, it's "Where are you from?" No, I'm like, oh, I'm from Dublin, and but where are you actually from? You know, I'm like, you know, and then you feel like you have to give the whole spiel, then the whole backstory. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm from here, but I was born here, but I came here, and then they're going, "Ah, here, I don't want to know your whole life story."
Yeah. No, I'm sorry to ask now. Okay,
yeah, I'm sorry. I asked, yeah,
you got the headlines. Are there many people from Somalia in Ireland, actually?
Look, I don't know the numbers, but I know in total since the war, there's something like 7 million displaced all over the world. A lot of them went to Sweden, Scandinavian countries, UK. There's a growing a little bit there recently, I think. But definitely when I came in, I feel like I was the OG Somali to come into Ireland back in the day.
Well, you and your mother, honestly.
Me and my mum, maybe she's the OG, yeah.
And your mother is some woman then, from the sounds of things.
She is.
She runs a business now as well.
Yeah, she has a business herself, and it's going 20 years. She does very well for herself, and she's a fighter. She really is. She wouldn't let anything stop her, you know?
Yeah.
But I think education was such a big thing she drilled into me. And I, you know, did my education through Trinity, finished up, started stockbroking, realised it wasn't for me, quit my job, started selling cars. And initially she was quite disappointed because she'd put so much money and time into me. Mm. But I didn't realise how much I was like her, you know, and just wanted to do my own thing. So I hope she's proud now, and I hope she'll buy a Nadi at the movies calendar.
Yeah. Would you not give her a free one?
No.
No.
Jesus, you never give anything for free to family.
Yeah. That's a hard one. And how's it in when there's a cost of living crisis, how's it go when selling fancy cars?
Honestly, I've never been busier, and I don't know if it's lucky at the moment or just the way things are going or the social media or the fact that I've just bought a new premises as well. It's on the motorway, so I'll be doubling the sales there. But I'm so busy. What I am seeing, if I'm being honest with you, is I am seeing a kind of gap between rich and kind of like poor, if I can say. I buy middle of the road stock, and sometimes they could be sitting there for a long time, whereas anything over 100 grand sells really, really quickly. So there just seems to be that kind of gap getting bigger and bigger, you know, which is scary to see.
That's interesting, yeah. So that would kind of influence then what cars you're going to have in stock.
Yeah, look, again, you just never know. You could buy anything. It could be sitting there for a while. But the trick is to have a good diversification of stock. And I went out and bought a load of kind of middle of the road stuff, and they're still sitting there. Whereas the more expensive stuff, which you'd expect to sit on a little bit longer, is flying out the door, you know. So look, again, just hope it keeps going. A lot of people trying to talk us into a recession for the last 4 years. I'm not seeing it. I talk to a lot of people in the trade, builders, plumbers, that type of thing. You get a sense of the economy, of the work coming in and stuff like that. And they're all still super, super busy. I just think we just need to get the houses up and running a bit quicker.
Yeah, well, we all hope for that. Nadia, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. I know it was a difficult trip in because there's excitement going on around town. That was Nadia Aidan there, owner of Ashford Motors.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.